Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The United States has seen a boon in domestic oil production, and that boon can mean a boom for oil on the rails, literally a boom, like as in an explosion. Busier railroads mean more derailments, and more derailments with trains loaded with old cars filled with oil means more tragedies. These explosive events have erupted onto the news, and communities are now demanding action. But Patty Riley of the Association of American Railroads say the movement of oil on rail is safe.
There is not a problem associated with moving crude by rail. You know, the freight railroads have been moving crude by rail for years and years and years and have been doing it extremely safely. We are moving a lot more crude by rail today because of the discovery of vast domestic oil supplies. And the reason we're moving it is because we are proven flexible, efficient, and safe.
But the industry does acknowledge that there have been problems in the past, and they're working now to avoid further accidents and disasters.
We have higher standards in place today. Everything from the selections of the routes on which these trains travel, there's lower train speeds for oil trains. We have increased track and equipment inspections. And across the board, we have raised our own standards beyond the federal requirements for safely moving crude. It's also important to note that we have been advocating for years now, the freight rail industry, has been advocating for better, tougher tank cars.
San Antonio sits at a vulnerable spot. We're close enough to the Eagle Ford Shale to see a lot of rail cars leaving South Texas loaded with the sweet crude. Are you concerned about those oil cars in our local area rolling right through our neighborhoods? Do you think enough is being done to keep our neighborhoods safe? We invite you to join our conversation. Give us a call at 210-614-8980. 8980-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org and write directly on the comments section on our website at tpr.org. Our guest this half hour, Catherine Wolf, is a Politico's deputy transportation editor, and Tom Smitty Smith is the Texas director of Public Citizen, a consumer and citizen advocacy group. Welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us on.
Catherine, let me ask you, how big is this problem? What's the damage?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about just in terms of the attention that it's getting, I think it's quite a lot. U.S. regulators are very concerned about the amount that it's grown in the past few years. It's really been astronomical. And I think in a lot of ways they're still trying to sort of get their arms around how to deal with that.
But Catherine, we had a town in Quebec go up in flames due to the transportation of crude under rails, and 47 people were killed.
That's right. I mean, that's kind of been the unfortunately the poster child for what could potentially happen. That's in some ways so far one of the worst case scenarios. Although it could have been a lot worse. I mean, Lac Mégantic is actually a rather small city. I think the population is something like 6,000, so you could imagine what could potentially have happened if that had been in some place like, you know, Pittsburgh, with a much larger and denser population. But yes, basically, there was a train that was parked on an incline and left unattended, and for some reason the brake failed, basically, and it rolled down a hill and got up to about just under 65 miles an hour, which is extremely fast for a freight train. And it hit a bend and derailed, and the cars went flying and basically exploded and killed almost 50 people.
Tom Smitty Smith, Public Citizen, have we just been lucky that we haven't seen something like this in Texas?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, because of the growth in the Eagle Ford Shale and the other shale plays, a lot of oil is being transported to refineries on the Gulf Coast or on the West Coast. 2011, we had 87,000 train cars a year carrying crude oil going through Texas. And when you look at the number or the amount of crude oil spilled last year in 2013, it exceeded all of the oil spilled in the previous 37 years since we've been keeping records. So it's we're at a point now where it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when we have an accident. And when you look at, say, San Antonio, where the rail lines kind of parallel I-35 going down through the center of town and then head on west across 10 and east across 10, you know, we're in some of the most heavily populated parts of the city where we've got crude literally flowing on rail cars. And part of the problem is that the cars that the crude is now being carried in, these old cars were designed in 1966, are kind of equivalent to a 1966 Pinto. They were never designed to handle crude oil of this flammability and were designed for other kinds of fluids and now are being pressed into service carrying highly flammable and explosive crude oils. And if one blows, if you just got one or two in a train car full of newer cars, you still have a significant explosive problem with potentially domino-style explosions going on down the rest of the cars as they blow up and ignite.
So, Catherine, because we've had these very dramatic accidents across the country, has this caught the eye of Washington, D.C., or lawmakers looking at this?
It definitely has. I think really the Lac-Mégantic accident where all those people died is really really kind of a wake-up call. And since then, federal regulators here in Washington, D.C. have been struggling to sort of get a handle on how to deal with this increased volume. And I think some of the problem that they've had is they really don't know what's in this shale crude that's being extracted by fracking. They didn't really have a great understanding of what was in it that it would be so much more flammable than traditional crude. And so that's been part of their struggle as well. So not only are they trying to figure out what they can do in the short term to make these shipments safer, but they're also operating at a data deficit. So they're trying to make the shipment safer while also trying to figure out what exactly is in this crude. But I did want to point out that most of the attention that is at least here in D.C. and most of the concern has centered around crude coming out of the Bakken region of North Dakota. And my understanding is that there's less concern about the particular flammability of other kinds of shale, for example, Eagle Ford in Texas. Most of the regulations and most of the concern is about the Bakken crude. But in any case, yes, DOT has been very concerned about it. They pulled in all of the people, all the industries with a stake in this, meaning the energy companies, the freight railroads, the people who own the train cars, and asked them to come up with what they could do voluntarily, which has been mostly a package of speed restrictions, braking, new braking equipment, and some things of that nature. And they've also issued an emergency order that requires that railroads share more information with the communities that they're shipping this crude through, because one of the big complaints has been that people in cities like Lac-Mégantic, right, for instance, didn't know what was coming through.
Catherine, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking about the shipping of rail, the oil on rail and how safe it is. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. With the Eagle Ford Shale and other booming oil developments in the United States, we're seeing a sharp rise in the amount of oil being shipped around the country on rail. And the U.S. safety officials say the dangers posed by the sharp spike in oil shipments on rail in North America extend beyond shipments from the booming Bakken region of North Dakota and Montana and include oil from elsewhere in the United States and Canada, including here in South Texas in the Eagle Ford Shale. These oil tankers are rolling right through our neighborhoods, but we've got to ask, what are we being told? How much do we need to know about what's being held in these cars and what are our neighborhood risk? Our guest talking about that this half hour, Catherine Wolfe, a political Deputy Transportation Editor, and Tom Smithy Smith. He is the Texas Director of Public Citizen. And we invite you to participate in the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, and you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. So, Smitty, in other parts of the country, I know like in Washington State, there are some very involved communities where people are videotaping trains and putting those videos on YouTube, trying to make everyone aware of what's happening. But it seems to be a kind of deafening silence in Texas about what's happening on the rails here. Why?
I just don't think people are as aware of how dangerous this is. Texas is awash in tank cars carrying chemicals all across the state. And so people are pretty immune to it. And, you know, frankly, the record has been pretty good. But one of the things that we are beginning to be aware of, and we're getting dozens of calls a month from people, asking about the Eagle Ford shale and whether it is as explosive as the Bakken, is that people are starting to worry about it. They're realizing that there is crude being shipped from these shale plays through their communities and wondering what the chances are of explosions. And one of the things that the San Antonio Express News reported back in January, a University of Houston professor, pointed out that the light sweet crude from the Eagle Ford has lighter hydrocarbons than heavy crude. That means it's more flammable and vaporizes more easily. And, you know, while the risk is low, it's, you know, 99.9% safe, it's that 1 in 100 that becomes the problem. And with the volume increasing, with the volume of fracking, the question is not if, it's a matter of when we're going to have an explosion like we've seen in Canada or in Pennsylvania or in North Dakota. And so the question then becomes, what are our how are our communities prepared? And do people know that these rail cars are carrying this product through? And are our regulators and our congressional members responding appropriately? Roughly a third of the cars carrying crude oil are designed for the volatility and the explosiveness of it. The other two-thirds are old standard cars that ought not be carrying the stuff. They're just not designed to contain this kind of an explosion or fire. And the federal regulators to date have done nothing more than say you should inform people about this, but have not taken any action to phase out these old cars. And so there are many of us are beginning conversations about, are there other kinds of emergency actions we could ask federal regulators to take to make sure that the old cars are not used for this kind of explosive material?
Well, it was 10 years ago this week that San Antonio saw a huge derailment which took the lives of three people, and there was a cloud of chlorine gas that that came. It was a Burlington Northern Santa Fe train that was sidetracked. It was struck by another train, a Union Pacific train, and I was working in the newsroom at the time at a local station. We had no idea that this was even possible, how to react to it, and it was very difficult in getting information out to the community as far as evacuations. And there were 50 people who were injured by the chlorine gas. So it really takes a community response when these types of things happen. And we have to have these conversations before the accident happens in order to respond appropriately and protect lives. Catherine?
Yeah, it's certainly true, and that's one of the big complaints, really, with the way that things are handled now, is that communities just don't have the information that they need. And, you know, to your point about sort of, are people concerned enough about this in Texas or anywhere else, I think it's half the time people don't really realize what's being pulled down, you know, through their towns. And they don't realize it until there's a problem, and usually it's a big problem, unfortunately. But for instance, there was, I think, the most recent Bakken crude derailment happened in Lynchburg, Virginia, just a few weeks ago, and I went down to that to the scene and was talking to the mayor, and he had no idea that Bakken crude was being pulled literally right through his city's downtown. His fire chief knew, but the mayor didn't, and I think that's emblematic of some of the communications breakdowns that happen with the way that information and flow happens with this stuff right now, which is to say that there's really not much of a requirement. Basically, what happens is freight railroads have to tell local fire chiefs once a year sort of a report, like this is what has been transported through your city in the past year. And that's basically it. And they don't have any more detailed information than that. And that's been one of the big concerns.
All right, our phone lines are open. If you want to join the conversation, we want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. Craig has called in. Let's get Craig on the air. Craig, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I agree that it's got to be more dangerous hauling oil around on moving gut railroad cars than in pipelines. Pipelines is where the oil should go. There are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of pipelines crisscrossing the United States, here in San Antonio and Houston, everywhere. They're everywhere. And we're fighting like the devil to keep people from putting oil in this pipeline from Canada. They're not going to not ship it. It's then therefore going to go in railroad cars. And even though the risk isn't in a huge percentage of time they're going to blow up, else they'd be blowing up all the time, they are, and it's evident that they have to be more dangerous than pipelines, because you rarely see a big problem with a pipeline. You'll see a small one every once in a while, but very seldom. And so the folks that are fighting against the pipeline have got to wake up and smell the roses.
Okay.
And get it in the ground where it should be.
All right, Craig, thanks for your call. Thank you for bringing up that topic. We wanted to get to that eventually, but I'm glad you brought it up. Call again, please. So, Smitty, your reaction.
Yep. Well, I'm one of the people who have been fighting against the tar sands pipeline, and I'll point out, I am pro-pipeline. I agree with your listener's point that pipelines are far safer than rail cars. The tar sands are not your daddy's crude oil. They're far more toxic, more corrosive, more abrasive, and they're like an asphalt or roofing tar that would literally paves the bottom of a water system when it comes in contact with a lake or a stream and kills life there. And it off-gasses a tremendous amount of toxins if there's a leak. And so it's a crude of a different type and toxicity. And so I think that, you know, there are many of us who are notably schizophrenic on the issue of pipelines. We like pipelines for traditional crude, oppose any shipment of the tar sands because of its toxicity. Just to put another point to it, there are more miles of pipeline in Texas than we have miles of road. And we don't often have accidents or explosions, and sometimes we do, and they're awful and can be particularly dangerous. But on a mile-per-mile basis, pipelines are preferable. But the problem we have is you can't build pipelines fast enough to pull the Eagle Ford oil or the stuff that's coming out in Midland, Odessa. And by the time you get the pipelines in place, the plays are almost always just about dead. And so the rail is a short-term fix to the transportation problem. And as a result, oftentimes we're putting far more petroleum on our rails than the systems were ever designed to handle or anybody really knows. And so we've got to take a look at the reality of what's happening in Texas today. We're moving the stuff by rail, and we need to make sure people know about it. We've got to have our emergency stuff plans in place. And for the foreseeable future, we're going to be moving it. And if we're doing that, we've got to question whether the cars that we're rolling in are sort of the Eagle Ford Pintos of our generation and are far more explosive and dangerous than modern technology. I mean, these cars, most of them were built in the 60s and early 70s. And this is our automobiles have become far safer. So have our rail cars, and new standard cars, new modern cars ought to be all in this stuff. not the stuff that's 40 and 50 years old.
Catherine Wolf, earlier we heard from the Association of American Railroads, and they were saying they're taking action to make the rail movement of oil safer. Is that adequate?
Well, I think that from their perspective, you know, they point out that rail transport is exceptionally safe. I think the statistic is something over 99% of payloads get transported without any kind of incident. They also have supported actually going farther than a lot of other people have. For instance, right now the federal regulators are working on a rule that would mandate some stronger tank car standards for the cars that actually transport these things. There's some disagreements among the various interests, primarily in the energy sector, about just how far that should go. But the railroad industry wants to see this shale crude being transported in a pressurized tank car, for instance, which is a much higher standard. So,
Catherine, we're out of time, but I appreciate your answer. So it sounds like there is some movement to try and make it safer, but there is still some room for improvement. Catherine Wolf, political director for transportation, editor at Politico, and Tom Smitty-Smith at Public Citizen. Thanks for being part of our show today. This is The Source on KSTX.
Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flev is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.